Network, proudly presents the Jay Slade Show. With your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as special guests. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for bringing us back from the break in style. He's absolutely right. I am Jay Flemmer, and you are listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Big thank you to Alexa Hammer for being our first guest, coming out for the first half of the show and talking about the Open Championship while it was going on. A little bit of a fast-forward button now. The tournament's been completed, and we've got fellow TNN contributor, Golf News Net writer and broadcaster Tony Gear has come on the show to talk to us a little about the aftermath of that absolute pummeling that Henrik Stenson put on Troon to become the 145th Open champion. Tony, welcome back to the show. Good to have you again.
Thank you, Jess. Great to be back.
Well, let's get right to it. Give us your impressions of Henrik 63 and overall the 145th Open Championship from Royal Troon.
Wow, where to start? I think taking the second part first, I think the 145th Open Championship at Royal Troon was one of the greatest ever. If not the greatest ever. I mean, obviously the comparison is there with 77 at Turnberry, which I believe, I think was the first Open I ever saw on TV. I wonder if my dad was there actually. He might have been there. So that's actually obviously a great first Open to have. It's like yesterday. If you're going to watch, if that's going to be your first Open, and you're going to become interested in golf straight away. So, I mean, we talk about growing the game at the moment, and I think if any kids were having to be watching yesterday, I think that's a better advertisement for golf than any initiative that any organization could come up with. It was absolutely wonderful from start to finish. The 63, we've got, that's obviously gone into the conversation, you know, among the greatest closing rounds in a major of all time. I personally would put it just behind, Nicklaus's 65 at Augusta in 86, which I think is going to never be beaten. I just think for the quality of player that was around him, the story, that just the way he played the back nine was absolutely phenomenal. Stenson yesterday was brilliant. I mean, absolutely brilliant. I mean, the only bogeys he had were three putt bogeys. His iron play was phenomenal. As a spectacle, I would say the 77 Open just pips it. But only because of what happened on the final green. And we were talking about the greatest player of all time and one of the top 10 players of all time battling it out on a wonderful course. And they shot a combined 131, and Stenson and Mickelson yesterday shot a combined 128. So Stenson and Mickelson pip it for that. But I think just because of what happened on the final green at Turnberry in 77, it just pips it as a spectacle.
You know, I'm not one to usually engage in hyperbole with regard to historical references, but this time it's warranted. Okay, 63 to close and win. Only happened one other time in history, Johnny Miller at Oakmont. And Miller was not in the final grouping even. You know, this was a head-to-head shootout a la Turnberry 77, a mano-a-mano duel between, you know, arguably the greatest name out there right now. Since Tiger's on the thine right now, Phil is the biggest luminary name, you know, and having won five majors, including an Open in 2013, that was huge. So Stenson beating him was a little bit like the rise of Watson. That was his second major of that season in 77, his third overall. I think we're going to see more majors out of Stenson. His irons are just so pure, and his swing is so fluid and languid. So both historically, what he did was monumental. He reset scoring records for final rounds. He reset scoring records for open championships, and he reset scoring records for major championships. Now, mind you, this is the second time in four majors that we've seen the aggregate scoring record shattered, and the second time in four majors we've seen 20 under. So it might be time to start to look at the ball and the equipment and other things as well. But that does not draw anything away from what a fantastic match we had yesterday. If you'd have told the world that Phil Mickelson was going to shoot 65, the world would have bet the house that he'd have come home with the claret jug.
Absolutely, yeah. It would have been unbeatable. And only Stenson in that form could possibly pull it off. And it just raises the questions, I thought, you know, if Stenson is capable of that sort of play, and we know for many years that he has been, why hasn't he won several majors up to now? Because, I mean, if you watch him, carefully, I mean, he did not... He's a veteran now, you know, he's in his 40s, so, you know, it's not like he's been there and done it before. Maybe not in the Open Championship, but he's been around for so long and played, you know, in some very, very pressure-packed situations. So, I mean, he was so cool and so calm and just chatting with Gareth Lord, his caddy, like it just wasn't that big a deal. I'm sure, you know, deep down he knew it was, of course, but he just dealt with it so professionally and so calmly. And it just raised the questions, you know, why has he not been in that position before? Because, you know, he's never had a 54-hole lead at a major. He's never won a major, obviously. And I find that absolutely, you know, given what we saw yesterday, I find it absolutely bizarre that, you know, knowing what he had inside him and knowing the golf that he's capable of, he hasn't done it before. You know, I remember first watching Stenson. I believe it was 2001. He won the Benson & Hedges International at the Belfry, and I remember thinking he was very different then. Obviously, he wasn't nearly as powerful as he is now. I mean, his swing has evolved and developed greatly over the years. But I remember thinking then that, you know, he was a great talent. There's something special about him. But you know, he's come and gone throughout his entire career. You know, he's had a couple of slumps, and the financial business a few years ago didn't help. But I mean, what an amazing testimony to his guts and his fortitude that he should come back from all that and play that level of golf.
They did not start out very well to begin with. He opened with a 3-putt bogey on the first hole. And then Mickelson, you know, makes a birdie on one and nearly holds out a chip on two. And it was amazing watching the exchange of looks between Mickelson and Stenson after Mickelson nearly holed out that chip. Stenson's smiling at him and giving him a knowing look, and Phil's just giving it right back to him. You can see Stenson saying, oh, okay, it's going to be like that, is it? All right, well, guess what, I'm resting. And to fight back through all of that, to take Phil Mickelson's best punches, you know, body blows, sat to the jaw, eagle here, birdie there, a 65, a beautiful 6-under round with nearly a blemish, and just run past him like he was standing still, you know, and close with 4 birdies on the 5 final holes of a tough golf course and a particularly tough stretch of that golf course. The end at Troon is not a pushover. You know, they played the easy holes well, but they also played the hard holes well. The biggest stat being he was so many under par, you know, 10 under par on the back 9 for the week. And that was where he won the tournament.
Absolutely. I mean, we've spoken about this before. That back 9 at Royal Troon is among the toughest stretches of golf, you know, in championship golf. I mean, the front 9 is... The front nine is fun, you know, the amateurs, you know, the club golfers like you and I, we can have some fun on the front side there at Troon. There's a lot of birdieable holes out there, and there's just a lot of character in those front nine holes. The first 3 might be a little bland and a bit of a straightforward start to a championship round, certainly, but that back 9 is just full of tough holes, and to play it the way he did was absolutely phenomenal.
It's sort of like World of Verkdale, where the next Open is going to be held, that the front nine, you usually go out and score, the back nine, you hold on for dear life. Same thing with Turnberry. There's a very fun stretch in the middle that I like in particular, though. The par 5, 6, the short par 4, 7th, and then, of course, the postage stamp at number 8 with the 5 bunkers around and a camera in each bunker. That was pretty interesting to see that. Now, mind you, okay, Stenson came within 1 foot of not only not breaking the record, but perhaps having a ghastly double bogey to close instead. His ball stopped 1 foot short of the fairway bunker on number 18 that claimed Greg Norman 1 year or so in 1989. So, you know, by those margins are major championships won and lost. So it was a fascinating Open, though. And the one other thing that I'll say is basically the entire week the stories were Phil and Henrik. Everybody else was seemingly playing a completely different golf course, and that's another way in which this was like Turnberry in 77. The vast margin, 11 shots, you know, between Phil Mickelson and the next golfer. They ran away and hid and made it their own personal playground. You know, and that happens once in a while in majors, and when it does, you just got to sit back and love it for what it's worth. We may not see that again for a long time.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's 39 years since 77, and, you know, it might be that much again, but before we see two players playing so brilliantly on Championship Sunday.
One of them an immortal, and the other one, if he keeps it up, a Hall of Famer. I still say Stenson's got a few good years in him, but there are so many good players right now at the top, you know, in the mix that you can throw out there. There really isn't a big three or a big four. Okay, you know, the big three, Palmer, Watson, and Nicklaus, one between them, 18 plus 8 is 26, plus 6 is 32 majors, okay? You take the next four guys right now, not including Phil if you want to put the younger kids in there, and you get something like 6 or 7. So, you know, we got a long way before we get anybody a big anything. But still, there's so many guys you can name that have a chance to win the major every time they start. Dustin Johnson, Henrik Stenson, Rory McIlroy. You can even name Fowler, who's had a big win at the Players and another big win when he came from miles behind to take Quail Hollow. You know, so that's one of the reasons why we haven't seen Stenson win so many majors, is that guys like McIlroy and Spieth have been winning them, you know, not by the handful, but with more frequency. But Stenson is too strong a player, too cool and phlegmatic a demeanor, too unflappable out there, and just too much of an Byron with that swing for him to not win another major, you know, all the rest of those guys notwithstanding. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. You know, for the last few weeks, all we've spoken about really in terms of top of the world rankings is Dustin Johnson, who, you know, for many years was there or thereabouts and just hiccuped at the final hurdle. And we all thought that, you know, what he's capable of is phenomenal. And a lot of the other players are all saying, you know, he's by far and away the best athlete out there, and he's more talented than a lot of the other players. And so I got this impression that, just like when Nicklaus beat Palmer at Oakmont in 62 at the US Open there for Nicklaus's first major, Palmer said, you know, the big guy's out of the cage now, everyone else had better look out, or something like that. And I thought I think that's very similar to what was happening with Dustin Johnson. You know, now that he's won one major, as soon as he won a major, obviously he won the WGC. And I was thinking, I'm thinking exactly the same with him. You know, now that Johnson's out of the cage, now that he's won his major, what are we going to see from him? And he wasn't really a factor at Troon, but, you know, he kind of almost forgotten in the Mickelson and Stenson show. But exactly the same with Stenson.
Everybody was forgotten in the Mickelson and Stenson show.
That's true.
Made it so remarkable. One more question before we go to break. We go to Birkdale next year. Preview Birkdale for us.
Bergdahl is, it's a strange one, Bergdahl. It polarizes a lot of people. It's really split 50-50 down the middle. I personally love Bergdahl. I think, you know, it's got some enormous sand dunes. They're really, intimidating sand dunes, but the fairways in between them are very flat. So whereas we saw at Troon, especially at the 13th, 15th holes, 9, 10, you know, the dunes, the undulations are in the fairways. And this raised another point. I'm kind of glad that, there was a lot of rain. One, because obviously it identifies the best golfer because, you know, they're playing in tough conditions, but also on fairways that are so up and down, so undulating. If it's too firm and fast, virtually every drive just runs off the fairway into the rough, which I think, you know, once you can predict where the ball is going to be is, you know, regardless of where it pitches, I think that's too firm and fast, and I think that's gone too far. So I was glad there was a little bit of green in the fairways, because that prevented balls from going in the rough that shouldn't have done. And it rewarded good driving, I thought. You know, that's another argument. You know, firm and fast is obviously ideal, but too firm and fast, I think, is ridiculous. Bergdahl,
I'm a big fan of Bergdahl because the fans have great views. They can stand up along all of the dunes and line all of the fairways. I'm a big fan of Rumpel fairways. I loved 15 at Troon, that heaving sea fairway. Mm-hmm. I agree with you that when you use that confirmed conditions to suppress scoring, you know, you're kind of taking away the purpose of fast and firm conditions, which is to allow people to use the ground game and stay even with the longer hitters. We'll see a little bit more of the aerial style of golf, kind of like we did at Troon. It was very weird to see guys sucking the ball back to the pin. But it was a lot of fun. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back with one more short segment with Tony Dear. I'm Jay Flower. You are listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.